I am wrong. 100%. I know that I'm wrong, at least in some places. I don't know where I'm wrong.
You're 100% certain that you're wrong some percentage.
Exactly. Okay. I am definitely wrong about this to some degree, maybe completely. I'm just telling you that this is my POV.
Welcome to Trinity Radio. I'm Braxton Hunter, and today we're going to be taking a look at Rhett and Link's deconstruction as it stands in 2024 based on Rhett's newest video. Let's jump right in to hear what Rhett has to say about how people should view his spiritual experience. Mm-hmm.
So whatever spiritual truth there may be is probably not an accumulation of facts. It really can't be defended. I can't convince somebody of it, and I probably shouldn't try to. So this, to me, is the most honest and truthful position that I can have at the moment. Now, I could be wrong. I am wrong. 100%. I know that I'm wrong, at least in some places. I don't know where I'm wrong.
You're 100% certain that you're wrong some percentage.
Exactly. Okay. I am definitely wrong about this to some degree. Maybe completely, but I'm not so sure, like, being right, being wrong. I don't know if that's what it's about anyway. I'm just telling you that this is my POV. You know, like if you go visit a national park and you're walking on a trail and you pass somebody and they say, oh, they start telling you things like, maybe you got a question and they're like, well, about 2 miles up, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It's just a dude in the park.
Right.
I mean, maybe he's right, maybe he's wrong.
But you're almost there. Keep going.
But you, really? Yeah, right. But you're like, what's
your almost?
That's a perfect analogy. Because what is almost to you? It's just a dude in a park. That's what I am. I'm a dude in a park.
Okay, so we love that humility. He's like a guy in a park, and maybe he's right, maybe he's wrong. He tells you, let's say the waterfall. You're wanting to get to a waterfall that this path is supposed to go to. You've heard that there's a waterfall along this path. He's telling you, you're almost there, keep going, it's down the path. Just keep trucking, you're going to get there. And he says he's somewhat like this guy on the path. He's just telling you his thing. That's the credibility the guy on the path would have should be the credibility that you have. All right, I look at this metaphor and I think, okay, maybe. But I actually think the better way to look at this, especially in light of the discussion that's going to come, is that the people on the path are the Christians. There's this path that has been laid down, and it's been there for hundreds and hundreds, in fact, thousands of years. This path is understood to lead to this incredible waterfall. And there's not one guy on the path. There's millions of people on the path. And they're all telling you about experiences they've had at the waterfall, funny experiences, moving experiences, what it was like when they were there with their kids, all these kind of things about the waterfall. And they're telling you that it's up the path. Now, they could still all be wrong. And Rhett wants to make that point in the videos that just because a lot of, you know, I have my thing and it could be wrong, but the mistake is thinking that just because a big religion filled with a lot of people that believe something, that makes it right. Well, that's not exactly what we're saying. I'm just taking your metaphor and rolling with it as we have it. And according to the metaphor, I just want to say here, it works much better that the path has been laid down for hundreds of years, millions of people on this path, that they're all talking about their experiences or looking forward to that experience. And what your role, I would say, and I don't mean this in an insulting way. Again, just so anybody knows, I'm a mythical beast. I love Rhett and Link. Big fans. I've tried to always be charitable and kind in my videos that I've made in response to them. I still watch Good Mythical Morning. I don't mean this insulting, but what you've said about your understanding of the supernatural, which could be real, the spiritual, which could be true, I guess, it's on the table. But what it's like is you were traveling along this path toward the waterfall that millions of other people were on, and you were looking forward to going toward the waterfall. And then at some point, what you decided to do in your disillusionment and with the questions that you had and the fact that you didn't think that the people on the path were providing good answers, you took off in through the woods just out 3 miles into the middle of nowhere. And then you came back to the path, and you're telling people on the path that are heading toward the waterfall on this tried and true pathway with millions of people telling them, you're saying, hey, actually, I'm not telling you to follow me. I'm not telling you to listen to me. In fact, I could be wrong. In fact, I am wrong about much of this. And I appreciate that humility. But he's basically saying, but I was 3 miles out that way, and there was a spot in the forest where I had an experience. And maybe you want to go, but I'm not saying you should. It's more like that. But then this just moves us to the question of why do the people, the millions of people on the path, say that they're on the path and say that there's a waterfall at the end of the path and say that they've had experiences with the waterfall? And why do you say the thing that you say about your experience? Whether you're trying to push anyone into this or not, you do have a massive audience and you're influencing people. But the fact is, over here on the path, the way, we might call it, we're happy to tell you all of the reasons and the evidences. And in some of the videos, particularly the first one, Rhett did talk about some of those those experiences. But the bottom line is, much of what he talked about were things that were like second tier doctrines, things like a particular understanding of the nature of hell or a particular understanding of creation, and just telling us that he wasn't convinced by the resurrection case. Well, we actually need to know what's really wrong with the actual mere Christian message. We're ready to talk to you about why you should believe those things, and we'd like to hear what you have to say against them, because otherwise you're just some guy saying there's not necessarily any good reason for sure why you should believe me, but I had an experience 3 miles out in the wilderness, whereas the people on the path are ready to talk to you about why they believe what they believe and defend it in great depth.
Just imagine that there are multiple people who have telescopes pointed at the sun to look at the sun. And then there's one guy who starts saying, hey, I think that the sun is in my telescope. You know, I think that my telescope is the thing. Like, it's the right telescope. You know, you're convinced that the thing that gives you your concept of God, in this case, your religion of choice, is the thing that is ultimate, the thing that matters, versus whatever it's pointing to, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that, for me, was what happened. I think in many ways, it was a complete preoccupation with the telescope itself and a defense of the telescope itself, and being convinced that I had found the right telescope. And I'm learning more and more that my deconstruction was not necessarily a deconstruction of God. It was a deconstruction of my telescope.
So I like this second analogy, the analogy of the telescope. It's pretty good. We can imagine that the telescope is made up of, in the focus that the analogy is trying to throw more light on, the telescope is like your philosophy, history, your sacred traditions and religious books and your understanding from experience and all of those kind of things. They're all bound up in the mechanism that we're calling the telescope. That is the way you're looking at the world around you and trying to make sense of it. So when he says, my telescope, I became obsessed with the telescope itself and defending the telescope. Defending, I take him to mean, the particular sorts, ways in which and methodologies that he was employing and that his faith tradition employed to examine the world around him. And he became obsessed with defending that with less regard for the thing itself, ultimately, or in the midst of that, he became he became focused on the wrong thing, something along those lines. But he says that he deconstructed the telescope. He didn't deconstruct God, and he's told us that he's not an atheist, which means he believes in some understanding of God, right? So here's where that leaves us. You deconstructed from the telescope, but that wasn't a deconstruction from God. Well, you deconstructed from the telescope, but why does that need to be a deconstruction of Christianity? What we would need to do now is look at that apparatus and look at what you think is wrong or out of order with the telescope as it's analogized, as the analogy for your looking at the world and your investigative methods and all those kind of things. That's what we need to do. I don't know, think about it, with an actual telescope, there are people out there who can fix telescopes and make telescopes, and they know that things have to be in a particular order inside the telescope. The telescope has to be a certain way. The math all has to work out proportionally, I'm sure, and all those kind of things. And just from my own experience with telescopes, it seems like if you look through the correct end, you'll see things much more clearly. But if you look through the wrong end, it'll look even further away and less clear, obviously. So there's a lot of importance about this telescope in the analogy, because it's representing all of the different ways that you examine sacred scripture, what hermeneutic you use, what kind of philosophical approach, what sort of experiences you've had, all of those kinds of things, what skepticisms, what presuppositions you've got, all of that is bound up in the telescope. And yes, people begin to defend the telescope and they think they're defending the real thing when they're defending the telescope. That's all true. But what this means is Rhett now needs to sit down and tell us, he doesn't need to, but if this is going to fly, I would need to know, what about that telescope, your telescope, was so problematic when you were a Christian that now you need to ditch that whole telescope and go get a different telescope that's not a Christian telescope? What is the thing? What was wrong? Because what I see happening in the videos that he's mentioned, not the things that he's just referenced, like, well, I didn't buy the resurrection, but the things he's like gone through and given us an evidential look at, which was particularly in the first video that he did. And what we'll see there is often secondary doctrines that he came to question. Secondary doctrines in Christianity are things like, how do you specifically understand creation? How do you specifically understand end times? How do you specifically understand the free will of man and the sovereignty of God? Is it Calvinism or Arminianism or something else? These are all secondary doctrines. And what that means is, as secondary doctrines, if you found out you were wrong about those things, it wouldn't mean Christianity, qua Christianity, is false. Like, think about it. If you found out today that evolution is true, and it's a very important topic, but if you found out today that evolution is true and you don't believe in evolution, does that mean that God doesn't exist or God didn't raise Jesus from the dead? No. So in the analogy, I take these to be like the polish that you use on the lenses of your telescope, or the trappings of the telescope, or the lighting in the room as you're using the telescope. These are like important things, but they're secondary to the actual big picture that we're getting. And with those things, if you have the right secondary ideas, right? We're all wrong about some things, as Rhett says. Then if you had the right secondary doctrines, well, it would clarify things and you would be able to see a better picture of the sun in this analogy, or the stars, or whatever it is. But they're not exactly the big picture. You know, you could still get the big picture right. And clearly he recognizes this because he saw God through his Christian telescope, and he hasn't deconstructed God. He's just deconstructed the specificity he has about God based on the telescope. And he has come to the point where he has rejected Christianity. My question would be, why did you keep God that you saw through that telescope? And why did you ditch Christianity? Because what could happen, unfortunately, is based on secondary doctrines, which he has shown us why he didn't like some of those secondary doctrines. You don't like some of those, you don't like the trappings of the telescope, and so you toss the telescope, when really what you just did was waste a perfectly good telescope. The telescope was fine, you just needed to perhaps fix a few things, right? And we all have to do that from time to time. So really what this gets down to is, I need to know the evidence. I need to know why you've come to the conclusion specifically. What pieces of evidence led you to conclude that Christianity is false? That are the mere Christian, the basic, that's going to come up, mere Christianity, the basic claims that all Christians everywhere accept.
They use an analogy that C.S. Lewis introduced back in the day in reference to mere Christianity. And basically, it's this idea that Christianity is a house with many rooms. What C.S. Lewis saw his role as is to invite people into what he called mere Christianity. I mean, that's a famous book, but it was also a concept. Basically, it means the baseline ideas, the foundational truths of Christianity that
would get you in the front door,
unite all Christians. And that was the front door and the hallway.
Okay.
And then along the hallway, there are these rooms, and that would be your different traditions and denominations. And C.S. Lewis was like, you need to settle into one of these rooms. Like, if you really want to, like, sit down, have tea, sit next to the fire, have community, get out of the hallway, get into one of the rooms, and that's where you experience a real home. But he wasn't trying to convince people of a room. He was trying to get people into the door. And so Josh and Jack expand on this analogy and introduce something called attic Christianity. And this describes groups of Christians that kind of forget that they're a part of the larger house, and they retreat into the attic, right? Where you can become convinced that you are correct, that you are the most correct. And when you're in the attic and you're in this restricted, confined space, you're just asking to hit your head on the rafters, right? You're asking to become disillusioned with this very narrow view that you have adopted. And then what you do is you jump out of the second story attic and you land on the ground. And the point of the book is to encourage people who are in the attic to come back to the main floor of Christianity, examine the central claims of Christianity, the foundation, stay inside the house.
Okay.
Don't jump out.
Okay, so there's the analogy as it's presented and adapted, and now let's hear some of what Rhett has to say in response.
But I kept finding issues. And I would say specifically the thing that I was finding was things that maybe made me think that the house wasn't built by God, but that the house was built by people. That was the overwhelming conclusion that I was coming to, right? That I couldn't have confidence in this as some home of spiritual truth because it was people had created it. And when I finally admitted to myself that I couldn't have confidence in the house, I walked out the front door. And from the outside, I could see, you know, there's a lot of things about this house that are beautiful, meaningful. There's transformational aspects of this house for the people who are inside. But I saw something else that when I was outside of the house, it seemed even more evident to me that it was a house built by people. not a house that God built. And then the longer I stayed outside and the longer that I looked at it, the more and more, you know, a new perspective of the house emerged as like, well, definitely this is a house built by people. But I also looked around and saw something else. I saw other houses that people had built. Inside all these houses, there were people saying very similar things. They're like, our house was built by God. This is where God lives. They're passionate. They had their own set of evidence. They had their own reasons for why their house was the place that God lived. Just an interesting note. Oh, there's other people who think like we did when we were inside our house.
Mm-hmm. So this is a false dichotomy. Can a house be built by people but be the house of God? I think so. And I think there's a Bible story that Rhett shares that we'll look at in just a few minutes on a different point that makes that very clear, that the God of Christianity often does things through people and even building houses that he considers to be his house. Now, obviously, on Christian theology, the people are the church. But the analogy makes us augment this a bit. The house here, we might say, is representative of Christian religion. It's the external religious artifices in our world, because there are going to be rooms in that house that have things that are not true in them because they're different doctrinal positions, some of which are false. You know, the Calvinists have a room. The Arminians have a room. These are the rooms off of the hallway. Remember the analogy that he discussed a moment ago? You have the entrance in the hallway is kind of like mere Christianity. You're in the house, but you're not laying down any claim on secondary doctrines. But there are secondary doctrines in those rooms off the hallway, right? That's my understanding. And so this house is built by man, and so there's going to be problems with it, but it can still be the house of God because more or less God wanted that house and people to be in that house. Now, is there an example of that? Let's take a look at what Rhett has to say about his favorite story in the Bible.
But then there was this particular time where God calls Moses up to the cloud, and he spends 40 days. And he goes well beyond giving him rules. He gives him very specific instructions on exactly how to build the house, the tabernacle that God wants to be inside. Mm-hmm. And if you think that you have like heard very detailed, difficult to understand IKEA instructions, this is like so many levels deeper than that. This is 40 days of instructions on exactly how to make the tabernacle that God wanted to be in. Like the materials that it needed to be in, what the furniture on the inside, like what the table needed to look like, the dimensions of everything, the lamp and the lampstand, the Ark of the Covenant, all this stuff. And then what to wear when you come into the tabernacle, who can come in the tabernacle, what they have to do when they come into my presence, the sacrifices, but not just what they need to sacrifice, but how they need to sacrifice and what they need to do with the organs and the specific organs. And you got to put some blood on different parts of your body when you come in. Very, very detailed instructions.
So it sounds like in biblical history, God gave very detailed instructions for people to use to build his house. People built the house of God. That's it. So yeah, it's not surprising that when Rhett steps outside of the house and looks back on it, he would recognize, hey, some of this looks man-made. Some of it does look man-made. But the truth is, some of the teaching is built by man. The question is, which of the houses, and as he says, there's more than one house. There's a Muslim house, there's a Hindu house, there's all these different houses. And which of these houses most reflects what the master wants? And we're going to argue that the Christian house does, right? And so you should be in that one. And what that means is, just because you go out and look back and say, hey, I'm getting a hint of man-made here, and I'm seeing man-made in all of these other houses, we're asking which one is closest to what the master wanted, the Muslim one, the Hindu one, the Christian one, which one reflects the nature of reality best? And we're going to do that by looking at evidence. See, part of the problem is these analogies can actually become a problem. The point of an analogy is to take something that is difficult, a difficult concept that's hard to explain, and you use an analogy to make it easier to understand. But really, all we're saying here is, all Rhett really is saying, and he could have easily said this without an analogy, is he could just say, I became convinced that Christians, even though there's a lot of them, made this up. And I looked around at other religions and I kind of realized, I think they're making it up too. And that's all you had to say. But if you want to bring in the analogy, we're asking which house is most reflective of what the master wants. So at this point, I actually can't do better than Gavin Ortland did in his response to the same video. When it comes to this point, I'd like you to listen to what he says, but this is powerful.
Just because there's a lot of people using the telescope doesn't mean that it's the best or the most correct picture of the sun.
Now, immediately my mind goes to the metaphor of the elephant. With the blind men describing the elephants. I'll put up a cartoon of this. You've probably heard of this. Basically, these people are blind and they're trying to describe the elephant. One person says it's a spear because he's touching the tusk. One person says it's a fan because he's touching the ear. One person says it's a snake because he's touching the trunk, and so on and so forth. And this is supposed to be a perspective about religious diversity. Everybody sees part of the truth, but nobody has the whole picture. But what they're saying is true from their vantage point. Okay, the elephant metaphor is told from the vantage point of someone who can see, someone who is not blind, someone who knows it's an elephant and is having, they have a superior perspective on it all. And so it's kind of condescending because it's coming across like saying, those people are blind, but I can see. In other words, it's claiming the very kind of transcultural superior perspective that is disallowing to everybody else. It's a way of, functionally, it's a way of saying rules for thee, but not for me. And I have, my basic disagreement with Rhett is I think the same worry comes up with the telescope metaphor. Because it seems to be assuming the very kind of transcultural superior perspective on religions that is disallowing for them. However, Rhett anticipates that response.
But the idea that I have to contain it and explain it, the idea that that thing, whatever it is constrained to an idea, to a book, to a religious philosophy, to an ideology, seems pretty preposterous. And the last thing I'll say is, because it's a common criticism, whenever I speak in this way, what I am told is that I am just proposing a new philosophy, that I am making a new truth claim, that I'm doing something that's no different. Another way to say that is you might say that I am building a new house. I do not believe that is what's happening. I am saying I'm not building a new house on purpose. And to tell me that my not building a house is building a house, that I'm not building a house. That's the thing I'm taking issue with. I'm not making a truth claim that I think applies to you and everyone else. I am saying that about such things, I don't think we can make truth claims. And if you want to get into semantics and say that that's a truth claim in and of itself, I think you're missing the point that I'm making. I'm saying I'm not building a house. Don't think we should build houses, at least right now. That's not a house.
I don't think this is just semantics, and I don't think this is missing his point. I think this is just an unintentional inconsistency here, because Rhett is advancing a very specific religious claim. He's affirming a particular doctrine about the unknowability of God. That's a very specific idea. That is then being set over and against alternatives, which are being labeled preposterous. That's his term. So he is making a truth claim that applies to others. He's doing that. If you tell Christians your religion is humanly constructed rather than divinely revealed, that's a truth claim. Or if you say, you know, if you say that Buddhism isn't true, or you say that ancient Aztec polytheism isn't true, you could be right or wrong, but you're making a truth claim and applying that to others. And so, and then the alternative view that you're advocating for, whether you call it open spirituality, or you say God is the unknowable, or however you describe that, that's also a truth claim. That truth claim has its own history. It has its own boundaries, and it even has its own specific ethics, as we'll see. It may not be cast as that, but that's what it is in effect. In other words, it's like saying, you guys are looking at the telescope, but I'm not looking at the telescope. I see through the telescope. Or in other words, saying, I see the elephant. Or if you use the house metaphor, you know, Rhett at one point claims he's not living in a house. And if that means he's not a member of a particular religion, fair enough. But if it just means having a perspective about religion that imposes truth claims upon others, then I would say that is its own kind of house from which the other houses are being called preposterous. And that is a truth claim.
Listen, the most important thing is what the truth is about all of this. And so we want to take a look at Rhett's evidential claims or his interaction with the evidence that Christians will present and how he thinks science and other things might impact this. And so to do that, you're going to have to click the link that you see the thumbnail for on the screen. Click that link and check out that video, and let's continue the discussion.